Let's start, though, with the Russia-Ukraine crisis. Vladimir Putin has been amassing troops along the border. Intense shuttle diplomacy between Russian, US and German envoys to try to avoid conflict. But could some quiet diplomacy between Orthodox Christian leaders who wield a lot of influence help ease tensions? Peter Mandeville of George Mason University and the US Institute of Peace has been looking at the role that religious leaders might play.
There's been a religious dimension to this conflict for some time, but one that doesn't usually get picked up by the media. And it dates back more than a decade to a time when Putin was still trying to keep Ukraine within Russia's sphere of influence. And part of that narrative was the idea that the shared Christian Orthodox culture of the two countries was a source of solidarity between the two of them. But once it became clear that Kiev was drifting and turning towards Europe and the West, Russia's tactics in that regard changed. And then Putin started to try to position the Russian Orthodox Church more as something like a guardian of Christian civilization and a protector of traditional family values against a trend in Ukraine of turning towards what was perceived as a secular European West, and also the idea that, you know, as Ukraine turned towards Europe, it would experience something like the forcible export of LGBTQ rights and things like that. And so, you know, he started to try and use religion as more of a wedge issue to build support for separatist sentiment amongst those segments of Ukraine's population that he thought would be open to that message.
Yeah, I noticed that recently the Christian Science Monitor said that the head of the Russian Orthodox Church, Patriarch Kirill, believes that he could have some role here in liaising with the Ukrainian Orthodox Church, even though there's been a breach between the two. I mean, is there some potential there for religious leaders to start talking?
I think there is potential there, but the very tight relationship between Putin and Patriarch Kirill and the Moscow Patriarchate of the Russian Orthodox Church with Kirill heads, that relationship has been an important component of Russia's external relations for the better part of two decades now. So the two of them have a fairly tight working relationship. And so while there is some potential for religious leaders to help cool tensions, it does come down to a question of who precisely is involved. But that's where we come back to your question about where there might be potential for religious leaders to play a positive role here. And so, as I mentioned, while Moscow has tried to use religion as a wedge issue, the broadly ecumenical orientation of Orthodox Christian leaders on both sides of the Orthodox divide in Ukraine has meant that those efforts on the part of Russia and on the part of Ukrainian politicians who have sought to emphasize the independence of the Ukrainian Orthodox Church hasn't really succeeded. And so I do think that there's a role for Orthodox leaders on both sides of the divide and other religious communities to kind of keep that space open for building bridges across those communities and helping Ukrainian society to be less susceptible to these tensions.
Yeah, what about the role of the Catholic Church in the Ukraine? Because we know that if you go back 30 years, the Vatican has started to oppose the First Gulf War, the Second Gulf War. Pope Francis is very strong on opposition to war. Could that be leveraged as well to try to cool relations, the role of the Vatican?
Absolutely. And as you've just mentioned, there is a sizable Roman Catholic minority in Ukraine. And when you look at surveys of attitudes towards religion in Ukraine, those surveys consistently demonstrate that the Roman Catholic segment of Ukraine's population, even though it's a minority, has some of the highest levels of religious affiliation and practice in the entire country. And I think that given the emphasis under Pope Francis in recent years about tolerance and solidarity, not just within Christian and amongst Christian denominations, but between peoples of all faiths, I think there is some potential there for not just the Roman Catholic religious minority in Ukraine, but also other groups that are outside that core schism, such as the Jewish community, even the sort of very small Muslim minority, to play a constructive role in this regard.
Now, more broadly, Peter, one of the reasons we're speaking with you is that you have co-authored a report with Chris Siepel for the United States Institute of Peace, and you argue that you can advance global peace and security through religious engagement. Now, first of all, there's a pretty obvious way. Why is religious engagement so important, for example, in things like refugee policy, development policy?
In my experience, you know, and in addition to my academic work, I've also moved in and out of government service over the years. Religion has tended to be a blind spot for diplomats. And I think that there are kind of certain historical and cultural, if I can put it that way, reasons for this. Modern diplomatic services and state institutions often tend to have a sort of secular bias in them. And I think there's also a tendency on the part of those who work in the area of global affairs to view religion primarily as a source of problems in the world of global affairs rather than as part of the solution. But as we know, and as polling done by the Pew Research Center has shown, more than 80% of the world's population professes some form of religious identity. And so I think that by not including and incorporating engagement with the religious sector in countries where diplomats are doing work, they're missing the potential to be able to take advantage of the enormous resources and the repositories of trust and social capital that religious actors represent in these societies, regardless of what sort of issue we're talking about.
I mean, you're not being naive here because you do acknowledge it, but of course, religion is a source of considerable tension at times.
No. This is not about it in any way trying to kind of whitewash or claim that religion is always a force for good. I don't think that religion is inherently in and of itself a force for either primarily good or ill. Religion is mobilized and used and invoked by many people with varying agendas. But I think it is the case that we're not always accurate in the way that we think about and understand the role of religion in world affairs and in conflicts around the world. So, for example, whether we're talking about the conflict in Northern Ireland, whether we're talking about the civil war in the former Yugoslavia, or more recent sectarian tensions in the Middle East and countries like Iraq, on the face of it, those are religious conflicts, right? Muslims and Orthodox Christians and Catholic Christians in Bosnia, Sunni and Shia Muslims in Iraq. And these are often talked about and represented as ancient religious conflicts. But underneath most of those conflicts, which really have our basic questions of territorial, political, and economic power and control, with religion simply being used as an issue to animate and mobilize and harden certain kinds of identities within those conflicts.
Yeah, it's obvious in a way that we can see the role of religion if you're doing humanitarian projects. Often a lot of humanitarian aid is delivered through faith-based organizations. But how would you, for example, leverage religion in defense policy? Because you do flag that in this paper.
There are any number of ways that religious actors are relevant to issues that we more conventionally consider to be part of sort of security and defense policy. So when it comes to issues like nuclear non-proliferation, there are a number of religious leaders and religious groups across multiple faith traditions and denominations that have talked about, written about, and preached about the dangers and ills of the spread of weapons of mass destruction and nuclear weapons specifically. So I think that religious leaders can often be important voices in making the moral case and sort of being the ethical voice around issues like arms proliferation. When it comes to the role of military chaplains, what the United States learned very quickly through the wars in Iraq and Afghanistan is that sometimes their most effective liaisons with local communities in those countries were not American soldiers or American military commanders, but rather the chaplains that are assigned to American deployed military units to provide religious pastoral services to American troops. Sometimes they were able to make a stronger connection and be the initial point of contact with certain traditional leaders in provinces in Afghanistan because of that shared identity of a sort of religious vocation and of a grounding in religious identity.
That's Peter Mandeville of George Mason University, and there's a link to his paper at the Religion and Ethics Report homepage.